In a world ravaged by the Hades virus, five unlikely allies forge a bond that transcends conventional relationships. Queen of Quarantine has captivated readers worldwide since its release, becoming TikTok's most recommended dark romance during the actual COVID-19 pandemic. This enemies-to-lovers tale resonated deeply with readers seeking escape during real-world lockdowns, with celebrities like Megan Fox and Kylie Jenner spotted with copies. The book's exploration of found family amid catastrophe struck a chord with millions, creating a devoted fan community who call themselves Nightkeepers in honor of the protagonists. Tatum Revers awakens in a sterile laboratory, imprisoned in a glass box reeking of chemicals. She's been kidnapped by Troy Memphis, father of her enemy-turned-lover Saint, who's harvesting antibodies from her blood to create a vaccine for the deadly Hades virus ravaging the world. Despite her immunity, the constant exposure leaves her perpetually sick and weak. Showing remarkable resilience, she takes only half the sedatives they provide, hiding the rest under her mattress to maintain some clarity. In her moments of consciousness, Tatum pictures her four Nightkeepers searching for her: Saint plotting revenge, Kyan thirsting for blood, Blake preparing to fight, and Monroe charging in like a dark knight. These four men, once her enemies at Everlake Preparatory School, have become her protectors, her lovers, her family. When lab workers draw her blood, she fights back despite her weakness, tasting blood in her mouth, a sign she's reaching the final stages of exposure. The isolation triggers memories of her childhood with her father and sister Jess, constantly moving from place to place. Her father had always insisted she needed to be strong, to prepare for every outcome, because life will be bad sometimes and she'd need to fight. These lessons now sustain her as she endures captivity, taunting her captors even as they sedate her. "You're coming to hell with me." This opening establishes the high stakes and introduces us to Tatum's extraordinary resilience, qualities that make her the perfect match for four damaged men who will stop at nothing to reclaim their queen from the clutches of a powerful enemy. 4 weeks without Tatum has transformed her Nightkeepers into vengeful shadows of themselves. Kyan O'Brien, nephew of a notorious hitman, crouches behind a car near the research lab they're targeting, his knuckles scabbed from punching walls in frustration. The skills his uncle Niall taught him, the art of walking through walls, now serve him as he infiltrates the facility through the ventilation system, silently dropping into a darkened corridor. Despite Saint's warnings about no theatrics, Kyan's inner demon rejoices when he encounters two guards taking a smoke break. He attacks without hesitation, unleashing the violence simmering inside him. When Saint punches him for this recklessness, Kyan welcomes the pain. The beast in him craves violence tonight. Their argument reveals Kyan's disregard for his own safety. Having survived the Hades virus already, he doesn't bother with a gas mask. Saint Memphis, son of the pharmaceutical magnate behind Tatum's kidnapping, leads the rescue operation with cold precision. Despite his father's involvement, Saint's loyalty lies firmly with Tatum and his brothers. When Kyan calls Tatum "my girl," Saint corrects him with a possessive growl: "She's ours." This simple exchange reveals the unconventional relationship at the heart of the story. Four men sharing one woman, all transformed by her absence. Blake Atwood and Nash Monroe complete the quartet of rescuers. Blake, once carefree and lighthearted, now moves with dark purpose, his usual charm replaced by determination. Nash, the newest addition to their group, proves his commitment through his unwavering focus on the mission. Together, they form a brotherhood bound by their love for one woman and their shared experiences at Everlake Prep. As they navigate the facility, they discover patient records showing cancer treatment trials rather than Hades virus work, making them fear Troy Memphis suspects someone is searching for Tatum. Finding a nameless patient listed only by number in room 39, they race there only to find an empty room with a whiteboard declaring "patient deceased." Saint refuses to believe she's dead without seeing a body, certain his father considers her too valuable to lose. While her nightkeepers search for her, Tatum seizes a rare opportunity for escape. When a nurse named Jonas attempts to sedate her, she twists his wrist and plunges the needle into his neck instead. As he collapses, she steals his phone and desperately dials Saint's number. The call connects briefly, just long enough for her to say his name before the battery dies at 2%. With remarkable resourcefulness, Tatum disguises herself in Jonas's lab coat and mask, making it to the ground floor before finding the fire exit locked. When she attempts to escape through the rotating front door, security guards stop her. In a desperate move, she rips off her mask to cough on them, hoping her infected status will make them back away. Instead, they cover her mouth, cutting off her air as nurses in biohazard suits rush over and inject her with another sedative. As darkness claims her, Tatum realizes with despair that her nightkeepers might not find her in time. This moment of vulnerability contrasts sharply with her usual strength, highlighting the genuine danger of her situation and raising the stakes for her rescue. Meanwhile, Saint traces the brief call to a clinical assistant named Jonas Barrow at Serenity Pharmaceuticals. The nightkeepers follow Jonas to an unmarked office building with armed guards, a secret facility not on any official list. Their plan is simple but dangerous: cut the power, disable the backup generator, and rescue Tatum while the facility is in darkness. When the lights go out in her room, Tatum immediately recognizes the significance. As Jonas panics about the power failure, Tatum bursts into maniacal laughter, telling him, "The Reapers of Hell are here, Jonas, and they've come to collect your soul." Her confidence in her nightkeepers never wavers, even in her darkest moments. The rescue operation unfolds with military precision. Kyan creates a distraction by cutting fuel lines under parked cars in the underground lot, causing an explosive chain reaction that triggers alarms and sprinklers throughout the building. Despite being thrown backward by the blast and suffering injuries, he forces himself up. Nothing matters except reaching the fire escape to meet the others and rescue Tatum. Inside the facility, chaos erupts as the staff attempts to evacuate Tatum via helicopter. She fights desperately against Jonas, who blocks her escape, warning him that her nightkeepers will gut him if he doesn't let her go. When he continues to restrain her, guards and the lead doctor burst in, ordering her evacuation. They strap her to a bed and wheel her toward the elevator, but she manages to free one hand and stab Jonas with a guard's tactical knife. As the helicopter lands on the roof, Tatum is loaded aboard along with a box of vaccines. Her terror mounts as she realizes if they take off with her, Troy Memphis will ensure she's never found again. Just when all seems lost, Saint appears in the helicopter, diving at the guards as the aircraft tips sideways. The ensuing fight is brutal, with Jonas holding a knife to Tatum's throat before the nightkeepers overpower him and throw him from the helicopter. Saint takes control of the aircraft himself, navigating them away from certain death. In this moment of triumph, Tatum reveals a crucial discovery. A silver box strapped to the wall contains a working vaccine for the Hades virus, the most valuable commodity on the planet. This discovery transforms their rescue mission into something far more significant. They now possess the power to save countless lives and potentially bring down Troy Memphis's pharmaceutical empire. After their daring escape, Tatum awakens at the temple, the Nightkeeper's sanctuary at Everlake Prep. Despite her ordeal, she immediately worries about exposing Kyan to the virus when she finds herself in his arms. He reassures her that he should have immunity, showing his injuries from the rescue, a bandage on his arm, and massive bruises from taking a bullet or two for her. The other Nightkeepers arrive at the window, Blake, Monroe, and Saint, and Tatum places her hand against the glass, mirroring Blake's. She notices their bond has grown stronger in her absence, a testament to how her relationship with each of them has transformed these once isolated individuals into a true family. The reunion is tender yet restrained, as Tatum needs time to recover her strength. Kyan tosses her a bath, and seeing her bruises and thinned body, he looks enraged. When she tells him she's a survivor, he confesses he worships her strength, questioning if he's worthy of her. She assures him he is, feeling like a phoenix rising from the ashes, with two pieces of herself back and three more to reunite with soon. After 2 weeks of isolation to ensure she's no longer contagious, Tatum emerges to reunite with Saint. Their connection is electric, with Saint composing a symphony just for her, a piece that begins like raindrops falling in the night before building into a tempestuous storm. The music reflects how she has transformed him, a man reborn, the same yet altogether different. The physical reunion between Tatum and her night peepers is passionate and healing. Each man connects with her differently. Kyan with fierce possession, Blake with playful tenderness, Saint with controlled intensity, and Nash with protective devotion. Their unconventional relationship faces no judgment within their circle. They accept that Tatum belongs to all four men equally, and they to her. Just as they begin to recover from the ordeal of Tatum's kidnapping, a new threat emerges. Someone calling themselves the Justice Ninja leaves threatening messages, including a window covered in red paint spelling "Mine." The Nightkeepers discover this masked figure was just outside their sanctuary minutes earlier, suggesting they're being stalked. The threat escalates when Kyan is kidnapped by Ashlyn, known as Deep Throat, and her accomplice, Jeremiah, Bait. The kidnapping reveals that Ashlyn was Kian's stalker all along, not pursuing Tatum as they'd feared, but obsessed with Kyan himself. The love letters they'd found were warnings to Tatum to stay away from her man. Ashlyn's dangerous fixation is evident in her appearance. She's dyed her hair blonde and appears to be wearing Tatum's stolen underwear. Tatum pursues the kidnappers alone, refusing to wait for backup despite the Nightkeeper's commands. "Kian's in trouble. I won't be waiting for anything," she declares, demonstrating her fierce loyalty. When she confronts the kidnappers, they veer off onto another track, leading to a dramatic chase up a steep hill. The pursuit ends in disaster when the Land Rover goes over a cliff edge, crashing into a tree protruding from the ravine wall. The impact sends Bait through the windshield to his death below, while Deep Throat is knocked unconscious. Kyan finds himself trapped in a precariously balanced vehicle with Tatum, facing mortality when for once he has every reason to live. As the car begins to fall, Tatum throws her fist at Deep Throat with a yell of rage, shattering her nose. Kyan knocks her off just as the Land Rover plummets, leaving them hanging on the cliff by Tatum's makeshift rope. They watch as the car crashes below, Deep Throat screams cut short by the deafening boom. "Good fucking riddance," Kyan mutters as they painfully climb back up the steep incline. This confrontation with Deep Throat resolves one threat but leaves psychological scars on Kyan that will affect his relationship with Tatum going forward, particularly his need to always be in control during intimate moments. Their troubles are far from over. News bulletins reveal two disturbing developments. New test-and-divide measures are being implemented in Sequoia State, and Tatum is now wanted for questioning about the Hades virus release, falsely accused of helping her father. The authorities are hunting for her, claiming she's dangerous. When they discover the army has erected barricades around the city, they realize they're trapped. Their situation worsens when soldiers search their hideout, forcing Tatum to conceal herself while the four men are tested for the virus. When their tests confirm they all have antibodies from supposedly surviving the Hades virus, they're ordered to relocate to a quarantine camp for survivors. The Nightkeepers make the painful decision to leave Tatum behind, knowing it's the only way to keep her safe. Before departing, they're shown a flyer with Tatum's photo, but they play it cool, with Kyan and Blake even making crude jokes about her appearance to deflect suspicion. Tatum doesn't remain alone for long. Kyan's uncle, Niall, the tattooed hitman who taught him to walk through walls, arrives to help her escape. Together, they flee through the city streets, exchanging gunfire with soldiers and using grenades to create chaos. Niall proves to be both terrifying and oddly endearing, lamenting the loss of his sledgehammer, Mary, with her 10 kills, and how she made beautiful music when hitting skulls. Meanwhile, the Nightkeepers find themselves trapped in a military quarantine camp surrounded by a metal fence with armed guards and floodlights. Discovering their blood samples have attracted attention for off-the-charts immunity, they escape their tent just as soldiers arrive to take them for testing. With Tatum and Niall creating a diversion outside the camp, they manage to break through the fence and reunite with their queen. The group finds temporary refuge at the mansion of Kyan's grandfather, Liam O'Brien, a powerful crime lord. They're given an entire wing to themselves and settle into a luxurious suite, finding temporary safety after their ordeal. However, this safety comes with strings attached, as Liam expects Kyan to eventually take his place in the family business. During their stay, Saint works tirelessly to track Troy Memphis and secure their future. He explains that Troy is under pressure after leaked footage from the Hades camps was released, and his wife has publicly announced their separation. Saint's mother, he explains, is mostly harmless, but allowed Troy to raise him however he wanted, a revelation that helps explain Saint's cold, calculating nature. Liam announces they've been invited to the Mogul's Banquet at Royam Delit, a secretive club for the elite that Saint suspects his father belongs to. When Kyan refuses to attend, Liam gives him until month's end to handle Troy, warning he'll offer them as retribution if Kyan fails. This ultimatum forces them to accelerate their plans against Troy Memphis. Saint insists they need concrete evidence linking his father to the club so he can expose him publicly. After deliberation, they agree to infiltrate the club during the annual Mogul's Banquet to find documentation of members and founders, rescue any captives from the basement holding cells, and then burn the place down. Their planning is interrupted by an unexpected visitor, a woman named Jada, who Saint recognizes as his maid Rebecca. She reveals she's actually Kyan's aunt, who's been planted at Everlake Prep as a spy for Kyan's father. This revelation further complicates their already precarious situation, highlighting the web of deception and manipulation surrounding them. The raid on Royam Delit represents the climax of their battle against Troy Memphis and the corrupt elite. Armed with silenced pistols, knives, and gallons of gasoline provided by Niall, they ski masks under the cloudy, moonless sky. Before proceeding, Saint makes them promise that nothing is more important than keeping each other alive. They reach the club under cover of darkness, taking advantage of the shuttered windows that prevent outsiders from seeing in and insiders from seeing out. After entering, they navigate through corridors with the distant thump of music and smell of cigars and sex. They don the regalia of club members, capes with numbers and skull masks to blend in. Saint and Nash search for evidence in the office, while Tatum, Kyan, and Blake set off to free the captives held in cages in the basement. The horror of what they discover, people kept as entertainment and sexual playthings for the elite, fuels their determination to destroy the organization. After freeing the captives and directing them to safety, they prepare to exact vengeance on the club members. Meanwhile, Saint discovers conclusive evidence that Troy Memphis is the Grand Master of the club. Accessing the membership list reveals countless powerful people, government officials, judges, police, lawyers, and business leaders. Saint methodically deletes Kyan's membership records along with his uncles and other O'Briens, then downloads everything to an external drive, gathering evidence to destroy everyone involved. Their mission culminates in setting fire to the mansion, trapping the members inside during their banquet. As they flee through a window with flames roaring behind them, they run into the night like a pack of wolves, knowing they've destroyed a den of monsters. This act of vengeance represents not just personal retribution, but a blow against the corrupt system that enabled the spread of the Hades virus for profit. The most shocking revelation comes when Tatum is confronted by a blonde woman named Karen who claims to be her mother. Karen reveals she's been working on biological weapons for Royam Delit for years, including the Hades virus. She explains that Tatum's father discovered her secret lab and couldn't accept what she was doing. Morals are a concept created by people who want to control you, she insists. The only things that truly count are money and power. This revelation turns Tatum's world upside down. Her mother is not only alive, but one of the grand masters of Royam Delete and partly responsible for the deadly pandemic. When Tatum refuses to cooperate with her mother's plans to use her miracle blood for a vaccine, Karen subjects Nash and Blake to torture as punishment, having them strapped to large wooden crosses while club members place bets on their suffering. The final confrontation occurs when the Nightkeepers track down Troy Memphis to his hideaway. Despite his security measures, they penetrate his compound and confront him with the truth of his crimes. Troy watches with disdain as Saint and Tatum share intimate moments while explaining his fatal flaw, believing power should belong only to him, leaving him utterly alone and universally hated for releasing the Hades virus and his crimes at Royam Delete. Before Troy can react, Kyan throws a noose around his neck from behind while Blake holds him at gunpoint. Nash appears on the balcony, yanking the rope to string Troy up. As Troy desperately reaches for his hidden knife, he discovers Kyan has already taken it. Looking at the group before him, Troy realizes with horror that they're all devoted to Tatum. She isn't just Saint's lover, but their queen. And the cold determination in her eyes tells Troy his death is already decided. As Troy meets his end, each delivers their parting message, with Saint revealing he's destroyed Troy's secret will and replaced it with one leaving everything to himself. Troy's final moments are filled with the group's unified battle cry, "I am the dark in the dead of the night. Hear me roar," as he slips into eternal nothingness, forgotten and alone. The epilogue jumps forward in time, showing how the Nightkeepers and their queen build a life together after the darkness. Saint buys them a whole frat house at Yale, naming it Nu Kappa. Tatum teaches self-defense classes while her men pursue various interests. Nash in ancient Greek studies, Blake is Yale's quarterback, Kyan focused on art, and Saint taking classical music and political science. In a poignant moment, Tatum finally scatters her father's ashes at East Mock Park, a special place where they used to walk together. Standing on the bridge over the river at sunset, surrounded by her men, she says her final goodbye, acknowledging that her father taught her to be brave and strong. She releases his ashes into the wind, watching them scatter across the river, trees, and sky, feeling that both her father and she are finally free. 5 years later, Saint finds them an enormous white stone church converted into a luxurious home with a private beach. The space is decorated in white and blue, matching Tatum's eyes, with glass doors overlooking the ocean, a grand piano, and a massive stained glass window depicting five demons crawling from hell toward a golden-haired queen. The story concludes with glimpses of their unconventional family life. Tatum and her four husbands raising children together in their seaside home. During Saint's birthday celebration, the ongoing joke about a squid emoji continues to frustrate him, with the actual meaning deliberately kept from readers. As the family presses close together watching the sunset, Saint reflects on their happiness despite everything they've been through, a testament to the power of found family and unconventional love to heal even the deepest wounds. Queen of Quarantine ultimately delivers a message about finding light in darkness, how five damaged individuals found salvation in each other during a global catastrophe. Their journey from enemies to lovers to family demonstrates that traditional definitions of love and loyalty can be transcended, creating something beautiful and enduring even in the most challenging circumstances.